Welcome back, everybody, to Cast It a Pass, the time-traveling podcast where best friends get together to talk about old games in a new light. I'm Josh.
And I'm Tom.
Today, we are talking about Marvel's Spider-Man on the PS4.
Marvel's Insomniac's Sony's PlayStation's Marvel's Spider-Man.
Yes. And, you know, we talked about this because, you know, we have the new Spider-Man movie getting ready to come out.
Oh, really? We do?
Yeah, it's about like 2 weeks away from us.
I'm not getting bombarded with advertisements at all.
You're not? Huh. Interesting.
I saw a video on Reddit that was allegedly people fighting over tickets in a movie theater line. I'm pretty sure it was a faked video. Like, it was a real fight.
It had to have been.
It was a real fight, but they were not in front of a movie theater. So I don't know. But I was like, okay, Spider-Mania.
But we are going to be talking about Spider-Man today. And this is up there on the list that people say of some of the greatest, if not one of the greatest, if not the greatest, superhero video game ever made. And we're going to dive deep into this to find out if that is true or if it's just a load of crap.
Would you say we're going to swing into it?
Oh! Thwip, thwip! Before we spiderweb our ways across this game, I need to know about the nitty-gritty. I can't talk about a game without knowing nitty-gritty.
All right, well, let me, like a Spider-Man villain obsessed with video game release information, call me Release Man. Here is the nitty-gritty. Marvel's Spider-Man was released on September 7th, 2018 on the PlayStation 4, and it was later ported to the PlayStation 5 on November 12th, 2020. This was developed by Insomniac Games, who we've covered on here before. They, of course, are the developers of the Ratchet & Clank series. And it was published by Sony Interactive Entertainment. It is a single-player action-adventure superhero video game. Now, this is not the first Spider-Man game. It would be kind of weird if we went all the way to 2018 and never had a Spider-Man game. What is your history, though, with Spider-Man games, Josh? I believe you covered one for Jaeger's Retro Review, did you not?
I did, yes. So let's go back. Let's go back in time, all right? I'm going to do this off.
That's what we do.
I'm going to do this from memory as best as I can. We had Spider-Man on the Atari, which was terrible.
You played that?
We had... Oh, yeah, Spider-Man on the Atari. Yeah, it's bad.
Oh, my God.
It's a bad game.
Wow.
It's a bad game.
Okay.
It's a bad game. We have Spider-Man, The Revenge of the Sinister Six, I believe, on the NES. Bad game.
Well, I mean, you know, not a lot of technological power behind the NES, but like one pixel color per Sinister Six member. I mean, you know.
Then I'm probably skipping a couple in here and whatnot. We had Spider-Man Maximum Carnage, which I did a episode of Jaeger's Retro Review on. Then we had the sequel, which was, oh my God, I forget what it was, but it's the one that had Scream in it. But it was a sequel to Maximum Carnage.
Scream? Then we like had the Wes Craven serial killer Scream was in Spider-Man?
No. It's the other symbiote, the lady symbiote. Then we had Spider-Man on the Sega Genesis, which is one of my favorite Spider-Man games. It is one of my favorite Sega Genesis games as well, too. I highly recommend, if you have not played it, to go and play it because it is great. Then we had Spider-Man the Animated Series, the game, on all the consoles as well. And then you got into the next-gen Spider-Man games. You know, we had the ones based off of the movies. We had ones based off of the comic book series at the time. We had the Ultimate series that came out. And a lot of these were very hit and miss. I liked the first Spider-Man movie game. The second one was okay as a, I know that I'm going to get a lot of hate for this, but it was an okay, it was very similar to like a little kid playing Grand Theft Auto. And I know that doesn't make sense, but when you are a little kid and you're playing Grand Theft Auto, what are you doing? You're just getting in a car and driving around and doing all kinds of stuff. Spider-Man 2, the movie, the game, one of the best things about it was just being Spider-Man and swinging around the city. And that was it. The story inside of it, like based off of the movie and whatnot, it was just like, eh. Everyone always talks about, oh, how amazing it was to traverse the entire city of New York. Okay, well, what about the game itself?
Josh, some people like exploring open 3D worlds, and at the time,
I'm saying, though, like the exploration was fine, but the actual story in the game based off of the movie. It was just like, oh, okay, it's just a normal.
It was so-so, but it was right, that thrill. Right. That thrill. Before we get too much further into history, I got a big bone to pick. I cannot believe you skipped over Spider-Man versus the Kingpin, the Spider-Man Sega classic, especially the Sega CD version with
That's the one I'm talking about.
Wait, that's the one
when
that
I said Spider-Man for the Sega Genesis. I absolutely love that game.
Well, but why didn't you want to talk about the amazing alternate ending of that game where if you don't defeat the Kingpin, Mary Jane gets lowered into a vat of acid and Spider-Man goes like, no!
If you don't defeat them in a certain amount of time, correct.
It's one of the most infamous cutscenes in gaming history. It's just Spider-Man like, no, Mary Jane! And she's boiled alive in acid.
Yeah. And then you have the Ultimate series of games that came out, and a lot of them were bleh, meh. And then, you know, Spider-Man laid docile for a little bit. We didn't really see much of him. Oh, he was in Tony Hawk Pro Skater, too.
Don't forget about that. Well, let me pick up some pieces here, because I would argue he did not do a good job of remaining docile. I felt like Spider-Man throughout my high school years and college years was getting a ton of game adaptations, and not that a lot of them were worth writing home about. I would say, just to get back to agreement with some of the titles you mentioned, the Spider-Man that Activision put out on the PlayStation 1 and N64, that's probably the first Spider-Man game I remember playing. I played the N64 version, had a lot of fun with that. Then I played the movie version of the first Tobey Maguire movie, and that was fine.
Mm-hmm.
But what's funny about that one is that, you mentioned Spider-Man 2, and that's where we get realistic swinging around a city. The one funny thing I remember about the Spider-Man 1 game is that, he could just swing infinitely, nonstop up to the top of the map because his hands just went up and the webs would attach somewhere off camera. So I'm up above the Empire State Building, just, hitting the top of the world map. It's this is so dumb in retrospect. So there was basically an adaptation for every Spider-Man movie that came out for forever. Spider-Man 3, Amazing Spider-Man 1, Amazing Spider-Man 2. And then they filled the gap with a bunch of other Spideys. There basically was the Spider-Verse in that one game where it was you could be Spider-Man or Spider-Man 2099.
Shattered Dimensions.
Thank you. That's what it was. It was Shattered Dimensions. But talking about all that, it's good that you brought that all up because it actually plays to how this game got created. Because Marvel, they reached a certain point, it was around 2014, where they were kind of like, we need to make a new strategy for how our games get released. Because we're kind of tired of just saying, hey, we have a movie coming out, let's go to a publisher and have them rush out a tie-in game. Because then the games aren't that good and people don't like them. So the Marvel Games division, they wanted to pick a developer and just have them make a solid title. And in the meantime, Sony was really interested in getting Insomniac Games to kind of only work with them. Because what game had they recently just put out, Josh, for another console?
So in 2014, they put out Sunset Overdrive on the Xbox One.
Yes, an Xbox One exclusive. And Sony was like, oh, but guys, you make games for us. Come on back. And so Insomniac, when they kind of heard about, what Sony wanted from them, and what Marvel wanted to do, they were like, well, we like Spider-Man. And we just made a game about kick-ass traversal over large cityscapes. And then the pieces started to come together. And this game began to be created. Now, Josh, you had a PS4. Well, I missed that generation entirely. I remember when they announced this game at an E3. I don't remember what year, but I remember the hype around it was just at the fact that, it was a next-gen Spider-Man game. You had that new suit, the red, white, and blue suit that everyone was kind of losing their minds over. And the combat was very Batman Arkham-esque. But as a PlayStation player at the time, what was your reaction to seeing this and knowing that, this is on my gameplay horizon?
Well, I saw that trailer and I lost my mind. I heard loose rumblings for a while that Insomniac was going to be making a Spider-Man game, but there was no confirmation at all. It was very hush-hush until the one PlayStation event where it was just revealed to the world. And like everybody else, I lost my mind, of course, because it's Spider-Man. It's on the PlayStation. It's by Insomniac, who's known for making this arcadey third person action adventure game, which controls very solid and very just perfect at times. I was like, I'm going to get this game when it comes out. But I was waiting if they were going to release a special edition PlayStation console. And ladies and gentlemen, I own the PlayStation 4 Pro edition of this game because it came with the red PlayStation 4 Pro with the white Spider-Man logo on the front of it. And it is hot, it is sexy, it is sweet, and it was everything that I wanted. And man, I played the crap out of this game day one. I think I had it beat by day three. And oh, I platinumed it by the end of that week.
Oh my god, this is a lot. This is a meaty game too. I can't believe it took you that. Wow.
I got that platinum in like a week.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm more impressed at the 3 day part. Like, holy crap. Yeah. So for me, I didn't play this until this year. I remember your hype for it because this was on our very first year end episode. We covered the games of 2018 and this was in your top five. So that was pretty cool. And now for me, I played it this year when I got a PlayStation 5 and the remastered version came packed in to Spider-Man Miles Morales, which I haven't played yet. I'm actually waiting to play it around Christmas time because that's when it's set. We've played two different versions of it. The only real changes of note that I'm aware of, let's talk about the big one. It's that Peter Parker does not look the same between these two games.
Nope.
So in the context of this story, you're playing as Peter / Spider-Man 8 years into his crime-fighting career. So he's 26. I believe he's 26, something like that. But anyway, you know, he's an adult, he's out of college, and he still has not yet found the balance between being Peter Parker and being Spider-Man. And in the first game, he was motion captured and voice acted by Yuri Lowenthal with a look that, you know, is like a guy having a quarter life crisis, whatever. But then for the PlayStation re-release, he was given a little bit more of the boyish baby look of, who's that actor, Josh?
Tom Hiddleston.
No. Tom Cruise?
Tom Hanks.
No. Oh, this is really escaping me. Oh, Tom Holland. Yeah.
Oh, the owner of the actual country, Holland.
Exactly, yes. No, he looks like great value Tom Holland in the new edition of the game. And going forward, in Miles Morales and the recently announced Spider-Man 2, they're retaining this look. As someone who played the Yuri Lowenthal kind of original version first, Josh, what's your take on this change?
I don't know why they need to do it. If it's not in the same universe as the MCU, why try to make it look as close as possible to the MCU? I like the original look. I'm not one of those people like, oh, I'm going to boycott this game because they changed the way that he looks. Like, okay, how often do you play as Peter? You don't at all, right? He's in a couple cutscenes and that's about it.
You solve some puzzles. Like, you run around Doc Ock's lab and solve some puzzles.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Like, not that much, though, right? And I don't know. I really did like the original look of Peter. He did look like he was someone who was Spider-Man for a while now. He has aged a little bit. It makes it seem like he's been doing this for a long time. Where the new one, the new updated version, looks like he's too young. He's so young that, like, the things that are happening to him in this game are like almost child abuse if you play the PlayStation 5 version compared to the original version of this game, which is nice that I have both versions though. So I don't know if you get the PlayStation 4 version, if there's an update that changes it. I hope it doesn't.
I guess you would have to not allow it.
Yeah. I do have the PlayStation 4 version and I have the PlayStation 5 version of the game. So I wonder if I actually own both copies or both versions of this.
So I may be completely wrong, and if I'm wrong, please send an email to idontgiveashit@gmail.com. But basically, it's the PS5 remaster where he is Holland-fied. So as long as you don't upgrade your version and you are only playing the PS4 version, that's what you're getting, I presume? However, let me just say that, I get where you're coming from. The original character had this kind of aged tiredness to him, you know, as Spider-Man might. The only thing I can really offer to explain is just that, like, it seems like Marvel Games, at least across the recent releases, Avengers and Guardians of the Galaxy, they're kind of like, you know, even though we're paying these off to different developers, we want you to at least make things look close enough to the movie so that, you know, customers will be like, oh, that's familiar enough to me, I'll buy this. But I get your point completely. It's like, Spider-Man's always in the mask, what does it matter? So it's, I don't get it either. That's just my theory on what they're doing. Everyone's got to look like the cheap knockoff versions of the movie characters, i.e. see the Avengers cast.
Oh my god, yeah.
Let's talk about plot, baby.
Well, can I just ask one thing quick?
Yeah, go for it.
So Yuri Lowenthal, right? Uh-huh. Lowenthal is the name. Played Spider-Man, voiced Spider-Man. How weird do you think it was that he had to keep yelling his name out in the game?
Oh, because of Detective Yuri?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
It's kind of weird, right?
Well, the
Yuri's before... not like a common name either.
No. What's interesting, at least I think, is that also the fact that Yuri is married to voice actress and performer Tara Platt, who is the performer for Yuri Watanabe. So Yuri Lowenthal was acting against a character named Yuri, played by his wife.
But you know, one thing I will give, I liked their chemistry. I thought that they were very, very good together every time that they were on scene. I just liked the back and forth banter that they had, or when they were even on the walkie talkies talking and stuff like that. I really enjoyed their chemistry together. So it makes sense.
Yes.
If you have good chemistry, you should be in a relationship.
Exactly. Yes. And, you know, Yuri Watanabe, the police kind of liaison to Spider-Man, is not the only interesting character in this very large cast. Let's go through, you know, the usual lineup. We've got Aunt May. We have got Mary Jane Watson, voiced by Laura Bailey, who's in everything. She's the new Nolan North. Laura Bailey. I'm saying it. And I don't mean this as an insult, because she's hella talented, but Laura Bailey is the new Nolan North. So congratulations, Laura, on taking that title.
Don't forget Travis Willingham, who voiced Wilson Fisk, who I believe is in that group of people, you know, who voice everything. You know, you have Laura Bailey, you have Travis, you have Nolan North, you have
if you just had Troy Baker in here, then boom, yeah. it would be the Avengers of voice actors.
It's almost like there is a game like that.
Is there?
The Avengers.
Oh, well, I meant the Avengers of voice. Like, imagine a game starring, you know, freaking Nolan North, Yuri Lowenthal, Laura Bailey, Tara Strong, you know, everybody just one after the other.
I was gonna say, like, you do know that the voice casting for Marvel's Avengers is practically all of them.
Oh, is it? Let's go off on a huge diversion here. Hang on, I'm gonna pull up the cast list. Oh god. So, Tony Stark is Nolan North, Thor Odinson, Travis Willingham, Bruce Banner, Troy Baker, Natasha Romanoff, Laura Bailey. Oh, wow. Wow. They just got everybody. Christopher Judge, a.k.a. Kratos, is T'Challa, Black Panther, in that. But they couldn't get Yuri Lowenthal back for Spider-Man. Instead, it is Sean Chiplock. And I just thought that was funny, though. No, it's good. I love this. This is good.
This game starts off awesome. This starts off with pretty much going to take Wilson Fisk down over at Fisk Towers. Kind of just gets you to understand how the gameplay works, how Spider-Man moves and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But it's so seamless. Yep. It is so seamless from him jumping out of the window to just right into swinging. You're like, oh, I got this. I understand how this works already. And if you've played Arkham games, you understand how the movement works, because they do feel very similar. Batman feels a little bit heavier and Spider-Man feels a little bit more floaty, but it works with the way that those characters are made.
Sure. But even more than that, the opening cutscene, like how you mentioned, right before he jumps out the window and it dives you right into the gameplay, they do this cute little, almost like the first Back to the Future movie, where the camera's just panning around Peter Parker's apartment and you get basically a crash course into this Spider-Man's life. You see like newspaper articles about when he first debuted. You see little knickknacks that you can tell are like, oh, that's that gadget, or that's that villain's, you know, thing. And you see like a picture of him and Mary Jane, but like it's like fallen over, like something happened, you know, like you through just visuals pick up on this Peter Parker's entire life, and then boom, right out the window. And yeah, swinging through Times Square was just like such a kick of adrenaline to start this game. And then the actual fight up Fisk Tower to get to the big man himself is, it's a very well done tutorial in terms of gaming. I really liked it.
You felt overpowered, but not invincible.
Yeah, it's a good point, because obviously you have skills to learn and perks to unlock, but like at this point, it's like he's as strong as he needs to be, clearly, you know, so that was some good stuff. So after you take Kingpin down, oh, that's the end of the game. Thanks for listening to this episode of Cast of the Past.
You beat the bad guy.
Yep. But no, you defeat the Kingpin, and, you know, Insomniac said in their development that like a common thing they stuck to from Spider-Man stories is that every time Spider-Man wins, Peter loses, or vice versa. So Spider-Man, you know, he rounds up Kingpin. He's Peter Pan, but in king form. No. Spider-Man rounds up Kingpin, and then he's late to an important fundraiser at the charity organization that his aunt runs called Feast. And this is where we start meeting some more important characters of the game, including one Martin Lee. Now, Josh, have you had any experience with the Spider-Man character Martin Lee, a.k.a., spoilers, Mr. Negative, before you played this
game?
No. Okay.
No, and that was one thing. When I saw him in the trailer to the game, I was like, oh, that looks cool. Is this an original character? Diving into it, no, he's not an original character. Well, he was at one point in time. But his first appearance was a part of Free Comic Book Day, The Amazing Spider-Man, issue number one.
Like a relaunch.
And that was back in May of 2007.
Oh, dang. Okay.
I thought he was a great take. He was almost the main villain throughout this entire game.
For about half of
Mr.
it, I
Negative.
Agree.
Yeah. And the fact that they let Insomniac take control of these properties and say, like, this is what we're going to do. This is who we're going to use. This is how we're going to use it. And it worked because, like, he was a threat throughout this entire game. He was badass. He was mysterious, and he was just menacing every time that he appeared. You know, one of the biggest scenes, the thing for Lieutenant or Officer Davis.
Yep, Miles' dad.
The award ceremony for him. Like, when you saw him there and he just looks over and he's like activating everybody who has bombs on their wrapped around their chest and stuff like that. Like, you know that he really meant business. And every time you see him, he's like, oh, my God, he's like, he's so powerful. He's so big.
Yeah,
he's not big. But like, yeah, I mean, I really liked him.
Yeah, no, very good villain and very good in just that, like, he's. Arguably, at that point, he was kind of a lower-tier Spider-Man villain that could be elevated. Not that I have any gripes with any Spider-Man villains. He's got a very good rogues gallery. But it was refreshing to get a story that, you know, it's like, oh, is it Green Goblin again? Is it this guy again? But let's talk about the other villains that do get incorporated into this. The other big one, of course, probably the biggest one, is Dr. Otto Octavius, who is portrayed in this one as someone a lot closer to Peter right off the bat. Early in the game, we find out that Peter is basically an intern for Otto, who's working on this AI technology. And as their relationship grows, you start to see the arc of Doc Ock becoming the actual evil Doc Ock. And that plays into... There's one plot to this game, obviously. But it comes through like so many tiers and so many avenues. Like I said, I'm shocked you beat this in 3 days. Did you not sleep? Did you not eat? Because this is so beefy. No sleeping, no eating.
No sleep.
Who else is up to shenanigans in this game world, Josh? What other characters?
We got Electro. We got Vulture. We got Shocker. The fact that we had Shocker and Electro in this game, I was like, wow. How are they gonna show the difference between the two of them?
Two zappy guys.
Yeah. And the other zappy guy. Uh-huh. We had Scorpion. Tombstone was in there. We had
He's a pizza-based villain, right?
Yeah. Yes. we had Screwball. We had Taskmaster.
Another villain that I had no context for before this. Screwball. An ingenious concept for like a new Spider-Man villain. And basically, this game's version of the Riddler in Arkham Asylum, you know, more or less.
Yeah.
You want to explain Screwball to the audience? What's the concept behind that villain?
A content creator who has a lot of fans. Exactly. Who just want to kill Spider-Man, apparently.
Yeah, she's literally a VTuber who specializes in convincing ex-cons to beat up Spider-Man, and she streams it. And it's like, and she gets away with it because she's like, oh, I make all this money for my audience.
Oh, it's so crazy, though. So crazy. And then, of course, you have Silver Sable and the whole military thing that she has.
Yeah. I guess we should start getting specific because otherwise this is getting a little messy. So,
yeah,
Mr. Negative's run around the city. He's causing shenanigans and he causes the death of Miles Morales' father, Jefferson Davis. So that sets off the plot line where, like, Miles is, you know, he's now seeking to avenge the death of a loved one the way Peter started his journey. And after Mr. Negative's attack, this terrorist attack that kills Jefferson Davis, Norman Osborn, who in this game, this universe, he's the mayor of New York City, he hires Silver Sable's mercenary force to be the kind of military police of New York City, which I think is against lots of laws, but, you know, all right, we'll just roll with it. We'll roll with it. But this creates the kind of in-game enemy system, because, you know, when you're not doing the plot, you've got a lot of stuff to do around the city, and the villains you encounter are either street-level thugs, you know, like former kingpin thugs, you have the demons, who are the henchmen of Mr. Negative, or you have the oppressive military of Norman Osborn. And Josh, what kind of things can you do around the city with, like, those three kind of forces?
Oh, you can stop robberies, you can stop carjackings, you can stop... Well, you can catch pigeons.
Yes, you can catch pigeons, yes. They're not evil, but they are catchable, yes.
Realign certain radio towers. You know, all the normal things that you would find in, like, an open world game such as Assassin's Creed or Batman Arkham City.
Or Far Cry. Or
Far Cry, yeah, yeah. I mean, the tower reveal stuff. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff in this game, and there's a lot of great things to this game, but there are also a lot of annoying things to this game. And I can't even say bad. It's just annoying.
Yes.
I won't say that there's a lot of bad things. It's just annoying. And I'm looking at you, Taskmaster's Trials. I'm looking at you, Silver Sable's military base things that I have to score a certain amount of points on. I'm looking at you. You know, all of the things where you have to chase down the pigeons and the birds in a certain amount of time frame. Stop it.
So, yeah, so I'll get into it with you too, because this game's got a huge degree of critical acclaim, and I think for the most part it earns it. But this is a solid 7 out of 10, in my opinion, because as much cool stuff as it gives you to do, it hits an almost Ubisoft level of glut and repetitiveness in the open world activities. And everything you just said is absolutely true. And it's not just that. It's the whole, like, each borough of Manhattan is divided up into 9 sectors. And within each one, there are, like, a minimum amount of challenges. It's like, stop 5 carjackings, stop 5 muggings, align 3 towers, you know, everything you just said. And when you do it all, like, thing to thing to thing, it's like about like 145 of almost the same challenges just spread out. And not to jump the gun, but here's what, like, really infuriated me is this game's kind of split into 3 acts. And when the 3rd act happens, the villains kind of rise up and they take over New York City. And in taking over New York City, they more or less reset all of the challenges. And you have to go do them again. But now every one of the thugs now has jetpacks or guns. So it takes longer. And it really, you know, it sucked the fun out of, like, the end of the game for me. Like, I was kind of like, I want to be done with this. Not, I can't wait to get to the ending. It's like, oh, please let the ending be here. It's a huge slog. And it's such a bummer because this game mostly does everything right, but then it screws up in those areas. So was not pleased.
Yeah. And that was my biggest gripe with that game. You know, other than the puddles not being there the way that they should have been, because the puddles in the trailer originally, there was more puddles.
Oh, explain this. Yeah, please tell them this. I remember
there was
this.
When the game actually released. Oh, Puddlegate 2018, ladies and gentlemen. We saw a trailer. We saw Spider-Man swinging and hanging upside down and trying to save a Fisk-isk thug. And there was puddles on the ground. There was a lot of puddles on the ground.
Yep.
And then the game comes out and half of those puddles are removed. It's ridiculous.
How am I supposed to know that the PS4 I paid money for is powerful enough if there aren't puddles? The Xbox doesn't have puddles, so we need puddles.
No, but Halo does have some great water, Tom.
Oh, the best water. That water's so wet.
No, but like, oh my God, it was so stupid. Like, that's not the final cut of the game. It's not the final thing. Stop it. I don't give a shit about your damn puddles. I care about the goddamn game.
Josh, if people on the internet can't get angry about stupid stuff, then what are they going to do at the time?
I know.
But let me ask you a question.
Because I got a question for you. No, I got a question for you then.
I have a question for you that I can't believe we didn't talk about upfront, but tell me about your first experience through this game's version of Manhattan.
Oh my God, I loved it. I loved just doing anything and everything, going anywhere. The fact that you have the whole map available to you at the beginning of the game. You could do whatever you want. And first thing I did was just swing around as much as possible after I got done with the whole Fisk thing. And then, you know, I saw Avengers Tower. I saw Doctor Strange's house. I went down to Central Park. I tried to find Central Perk. It was not there. It was very upsetting. But no, I couldn't find the Ghostbusters house either.
Oh, you poor boy. We're going to have a talk after this. No, I agree with you. The city itself is just one of the most interesting worlds in any video game. And obviously it's kind of a cheat to say that because Manhattan actually exists, I know. But to explore it in this way with Spider-Man's just free mobility was so amazing. It's not a near perfect replica. Outside of all the fictional stuff, there's a few changes. The most notable example being the New World Trade Center. They apparently could not recreate it due to a copyright from the original architect. So there is a building that's very clearly the New World Trade Center. It looks enough like it, but it's different. But you get to go to all these places. And I have friends who live in New York City who, I remember when this game came out, they like went to their block and they plopped Spider-Man down the map and like they looked up and it was like, that's literally my apartment building. Like, that's like a perfect recreation of the structure, the stores out front. You know, they were like, this is, it's so amazing. And also just the fact that you could like go down to street level and like interact with people, the NPCs who make up New York City.
Get to give them high fives.
Yeah. Some of them will ask to hug you or take selfies. It's so incredible. This game world. Goddamn, you know?
Yeah. Now, my question for you. Mm-hmm. Did you think they were going to turn Doc Ock in this game?
Well, they gave that away in the E3 trailer, so I just knew they were gonna. Like, you saw...
No, they didn't.
Well, here's the thing. I also played this, like, 2 years later, so I kind of came in knowing. But so I'm saying is, did you think it would take longer?
I thought they were going to save it for the second game. The way that they built up the relationship between Peter and Otto... I really thought that they were going to save it for the next game because it was like they kept teasing it throughout the entire game. They were teasing piece by piece by piece that the arms were coming. And when it happened and the whole thing happens and he takes the chip out, I was like, OK, that's it. They're going to save it.
Mm.
And then the Riker scene, which is one of, if not the best moments of this entire game, happens. And he appears and it's just like, oh my God. And like, he just gives him a warning, But no, it's so good.
It's a prison break that turns into a multi-level boss fight with several different members of the classic Rogues Gallery, you know, Vulture, Electro. And yeah, and then it builds up to that reveal that Doc Ock helped them all break out of prison, and he's leading this game's version of the Sinister Six, which, if I'm correct, it's Doc Ock, Mr. Negative, Vulture, Electro, Rhino, and Scorpion. Is that the whole six?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
That's the whole six. Now, here's one thing that I will say about Doc Ock's arc in this game. They obviously are building up to it bit by bit. He slowly starts, you know, he gets angrier. They reveal that he has basically a condition that's going to, you know, cripple his motor functions. And he wants to make these arms so that he can continue working, you know, as long as he has his mind, that's all he needs. Now, another part of this game, we talked earlier about how there's 40 different plot lines. Mr. Negative is trying to get this biological weapon that Oscorp has, right?
And the Devil's Breath.
The Devil's Breath.
Which is a badass name.
It's a badass name for a crippling viral disease, yes. A viral weapon. So, the climax of the game you're talking about, when Doc Ock finally does his heel turn, not only does he break all the prisoners out, and, you know, start the Sinister Six, but he takes the Devil's Breath, which was secured by Mr. Negative, and then he releases it into New York City and instantly infects or kills, like, many of the millions who live in the city. And that was the one thing in this game where, storyline-wise, I kind of was like, that's the only thing, character motivation-wise, I was like, I don't understand why Doc Ock would do this. Like, they have all these subplots about how he doesn't like Norman because Norman's like cutting his funding or being a bully to him and stuff like that. But like, the citizens of New York City never did anything to Doc Ock. And for him to commit, like, basically, you know, a massive terrorist attack on them just because he's mad at Norman Osborn, I was kind of like, eh. And I'm almost wondering if, based off your suggestion, if like, maybe if Doc Ock hadn't been rushed through to the big bad of this game, in a sequel, they could have, like, justified some kind of horrific act. You know what I mean? Like, take a little longer, and then they do it. But with this one, there's just kind of, like, all the focus is on Mr. Negative, and if he's going to release the, you know, this viral attack. But it's like, oh, nope, here's Doc Ock, I'm just going to do it. But why? Why did you want to do it? Because I'm evil.
Yeah, and that was one thing that didn't really make too much sense story-wise to me, is... Mm-hmm. I don't think he really did say why he was doing that.
Yeah, he just did it.
Like, right. Like, I don't know. Like, but the thing is, like, if they wanted to make this unique, they should have made Mr. Negative the main bad guy in this game.
All the way through, right.
I think they shouldn't have shot for the Sinister Six right off the bat. I think that should have been a buildup. You know, maybe do the Sinister Six in the second game, and then do what is happening in the second game now, in the third game, because it was teased towards the end. But I see, yeah, I didn't like it. I didn't like that whole thing of Otto just doesn't, he just does it because he's bad now. He's evil. He's old. He's a bad guy. But when it, like, when it comes to the big of the big Spider-Man villains, like, okay, who do you got? Who do you got?
Goblin, Doc Ock, and Venom. I guess Venom at this point. Yeah.
Right. That's the big of the big. And, like, are they doing it the opposite way? Are they doing Doc Ock first? Is it going to be Venom second, all leading up to Osborn as Green Goblin in the third game?
That's interesting. That's very interesting.
Because, spoiler alert for the end of this game, Harry Osborn is come in contact with the symbiote. So if something happens where the symbiote leaves Harry in the game at the second game and Harry dies or whatever, is Norman going to see that and freak out and become the Green Goblin in the third game?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, that's just my idea, my thought process for this. But there are some great villains who are not in this game yet, right? We don't have Mysterio. I can see Mysterio being some sort of like a Scarecrow style section of a game. We don't have Lizard.
Mm-hmm. We don't have Big Wheel.
We don't what?
We don't have Big Wheel.
No, we don't have Big Wheel.
We gotta get Big Wheel.
But, I mean, there's we don't have Sandman.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right? But I think, like, the build-up, though, like I said, Riker's Island was probably the coolest playthrough part of the game next. I think that's the best part of the game, and right underneath it was the helicopter chase.
I got you. Yeah. Oh, that was as a visual set piece, the helicopter chase, and kind of, I know people can get pretty sour on QuickTime events, but like this does the kind of Uncharted / Tomb Raider 13 style of QuickTime events where like you get a little leeway to mess up because it's more about like just riding you through the experience rather than making sure you're absolutely perfect with the hits. And it just makes it really cool.
Right.
Something that we can't go without talking real quick though, is that you don't play the full game as Spider-Man. There are sections dedicated to two characters we've already mentioned. We have Mary Jane Watson, who within this game, she's a reporter for the Daily Bugle. So she gets several stealth sections based around, you know, like collecting information or spying on people. And then we also get Miles Morales, who in a similar turn, they're basically both stealth sections. Miles' sections are usually based around like escaping from tricky situations, where Mary Jane's is about information collecting and, you know, being sneaky and stuff like that. What did you think about these two character sections, Josh, when they popped up?
Well, we talk about things that were annoying earlier.
Okay. Okay.
These fall right in line with that. They just take you out of the world. Like, it's, you're so invested in this story and you're so invested in all this stuff, and then the game just comes down to a lull and you're just sneaking, and if you get caught, you gotta do it again. And then you're sneaking. And if you get caught right at the end, you gotta do it again. And it's just like, listen, the puzzles that you do with Peter in Doc Ock's lab, I will take that over these stealth things, right? Because it felt like when you were doing those things, you were progressing the story in some way, shape, or form, building that relationship between Peter and Otto. With these, you're just seeing the story from a different point of view and a different perspective. And I wasn't having fun with it. I was just like, I just want to get this over and done with.
And I got you.
A game should not make you want to do that. A game should not make you want to just say, I want to get this over and done with, because that's poor pacing.
So for me, I'll agree that they're a mixed bag, but I will say that there are good moments of it in the game. It's just that the scale is tipped towards, I just want to be done with this. I agree with you. Like some of I think there's two Mary Jane stealth missions that I think work really well. There's the one where she's creeping around the museum that Martin Lee owns, and she ends up like finding information, and it also overflows into a Spider-Man mission, because like that's where they bump into each other for the first time in the game, and they're like, oh, you're here too, like I didn't realize we were both working the same job. And it was kind of cute in this, like, oh, all right, like they broke up in game, but they still are on the side of like truth and everything. And, you know, the first Miles level where he's escaping the kind of aftermath of the attack that killed his father, and he's got to crawl through the rubble and not get spotted by the guards who will kill him. That was really intense in a way where like I enjoyed having to be careful. But then in repeated sections, they weren't always that great. There's a Mary Jane stealth section towards the end that I outright, it did one of the things I hate in video games, where you successfully get through the entire stealth section with her. She's sneaking around this camp owned by the mercenaries. And then right at the last thing, we go into a cutscene where she gets caught, and then Spider-Man has to rescue her in the cutscene. And it's kind of like, so all the other times I got caught in this level, that's game over, but you have to keep doing it. You have to do it absolutely right so that the game can catch you on its own terms. Yeah, and it's like, Don't do that. I literally hate stuff like that. Yeah, don't die on your mission, because at the end of the mission, you have to die. You know, it's bad.
Right.
I never enjoy that. But it mixed bag. When it is good, it's fine. And I get the idea, you know, mix it up, introduce some new elements, but they got to be balanced better. And I hope that if they do something like that for the next game, I hope that they put, you know, a little bit more of the effort into it. So we'll see.
Yeah. Big thing we didn't really talk too much about was Aunt May. The thing that spoiled this game for you, Tom.
Well, I had something spoiled, yeah. But that's my own fault for thinking I could bother to read about a game I was interested in. Well, we won't spoil it for you here, but let's just say that this game does feature a pretty heavy Aunt May storyline. She's not just there because she has to be there. Her relationship with Peter, also just informs a lot of his decision making in the story. And when you get to the finale, it is something. I gotta actually say that I just admire that they did that. It's like, wow.
I think the acting was fantastic.
Truly.
Throughout this whole game too, right? I think on top of the tower at the end of the game, the acting between Spider-Man and Otto together was so good. Mm-hmm. And the whole part where Otto's laying there and he's screaming like, don't leave me like this, I don't want to be a broken man, all that kind of stuff, like it really hit. But God, it looks so good too in the rain, the with the electricity and all that, like just the black and that yellow shine coming through on both his suits and on the arms. This game visually looked stunning.
Yeah, no, I just want to mention this, the finale, like you said, the Thunderstorm Tower fight. I read in a GameSpot kind of article summarizing the making of this game that Insomniac designed that sequence with 1 million polygons, which is the most at the time they had ever put into like the game ever. It's just incredible that that much processing power is being pumped out by the PlayStation 4. It's a real testament to what, it's a testament to how far games have come. I mean, holy crap.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's gorgeous. It's gorgeous. The performances are great in this game. There's not a single weak link. It's a gorgeous looking game, you know? It's got its bumps along the way, but this game is worth playing just for all the things it does right. I really do have to say
that. One thing to even go into though is the alternative suits in this game.
A lot of
fun. Not only are there alternative suits that just make you look cool, but they also have unique powers to them too. They're mm-hmm. a different ability. My favorite one, of course, was the comic book one. I love the comic books, and like certain times when you'd fight and it had like little like things pop up on the screen, and when you pause it has like, it looks like a comic book overlay. Yeah,
he has the cell shaded look, like he's just made of ink walking around. I really enjoyed, I enjoyed like the Spider Luchador one. I enjoyed some of the ones they brought in from the movies. I was swinging around as the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man for a good chunk of this game, I'm not gonna lie. There's an armored version of the white spider suit that's in the PlayStation 5 version, and it's so sick. Like I don't really collect like statues of characters or anything, but I would get a statue of that if it ever existed. Very, very fun. And I can only wonder what suits they're gonna put into future games. Like they really went out of their way with this one. I mean, what do they have left? I hope they left stuff. Oh, one thing. I'm sure you noticed this, but wearing specific suits and doing actions around the overworld with them, whenever you turn into J. Jonah Jameson's podcast, sometimes he'll comment on the way you look. Like I was the spider punk with the mohawk, and I beat up some thugs, and then J.J., he's like, he's swinging around and he looks like he's going to a metal concert. What a bum.
One thing I love too that this game does that other games, Arkham Knight, doesn't do is you wear an alternative costume. That alternative costume's in the cutscenes.
All in-engine cutscenes, baby. Yeah. No pre-rendered stuff.
It did the WWF 2000, WrestleMania 2000. So that's a callback to an early episode.
It is. When you're cradling a Doc Ock's body at the end of the game where Spider-Man's just in his underwear, you earned that moment, baby.
Yes. But before we get to our final say, because we've been talking for almost an hour now, we have to talk about the cameo. We have to talk about the best man in this game.
Stan the man.
Good old Stan. Stan Lee.
This is one of his final things. I don't remember what the timeline is on what his actual canonical final thing is, because after he dies, he's in Into the Spider-Verse. He filmed a cameo for Endgame.
Titans go to the movies.
He is, and that's fantastic. Oh my goodness. And of course, he's in Captain Marvel playing his 90s self, reading the Mallrats script. So,
yeah.
I just don't know what was filmed or done first, but having him in this, that was, he's the restaurant owner and he sees Peter and Mary Jane and he's like, oh, you kids are back together again. That's great.
I always liked when you two were together. And I was like, that was a great callback because, you know, he created Spider-Man. He created this relationship and he looked so good in the game too. That game, his in-game character looks so good. Yeah, I gave, when that happened, that was like a mark out moment for me.
I knew it was coming. I just didn't know. But like, as soon as I heard him, I was like, oh no. Cause like this is now probably the last thing that I will see for him. I don't think I have missed any other cameos. So yeah, this.
No.
Goodbye, Stan.
Goodbye, Stanley. It's been nice. But it comes down to the skip, play, beat, or complete.
I'll actually just say that this is not a difficult game to complete to 100%, you know, like one in that it's enjoyable to get all the way through, even if you have to deal with all the annoying crap we talked about, the greatness of the story and just the fun of the world exploration outweighs any of the crap. And this was the second game I ever platinumed. You know, if you discount Astro's Playroom, just because it is kind of easy to get a platinum trophy, I got the platinum trophy in this. And it's not too much of a stretch of your skill. I felt like this was a pretty friendly game to say, hey, like, you've conquered me. You've done 100% of this game. So I recommend going for the completion. It's worth it. What about you, Josh?
I would say not to complete this game. And that hurts. It hurts to say.
Okay.
I will say to beat this game. Because when you get into those military fights, when you get into the Taskmaster stuff where you have to be perfect, it is grueling. When you have to go to each section of New York and do countless carjackings that are the same animation over and over again. Tom, you said it earlier. This is a 7 out of 10 game for you.
Yeah.
Would you complete a 7 out of 10 game?
I did. Actually, in my review for this on Backlogged, I'm just going to read the final thing. I can call this a great podcast game. When you're not doing anything story related, you're basically doing chores. And what's better when doing chores than catching up on podcasts? And I have legitimately, when I was playing this game earlier this year, I was listening to episodes of shows that you and I have interacted with, like WT Famicom and Head to Head. Like, I just put those on and was like, time to go stop some carjackings while I catch up, you know? So if you need a good podcast.
Yeah, I felt like it was more like work going and doing all those grueling just tasks, the everyday Spider-Man stuff. And there's amazing things in this game. There's spectacular things in this game. There's ultimate things in this game.
Yeah.
But like, listen, like when you get towards the end and you have to do the two boss fights, Shocker and Vulture, and then Rhino and
Scorpion.
Yeah. Like those were awesome. Those were badass. It made me feel like I was unstoppable. I wasn't going to say it. It made me feel like I was unstoppable. Right. And so many times in this game, I felt like a badass. I felt like Spider-Man, but I don't know. I can't say to go through and put yourself through all the torture of all those grueling side quests, the Ubisoft side quest that we have come to know, hate, and sigh at. And I would definitely say beat this game, because it is one of the best superhero games ever made.
I agree with you on that much. Yes. If you want to feel like Spider-Man, Josh, the only way you can feel like Spider-Man is if you stop carjacking. Is you think all those things are work? That's his daily life. He's like, oh, I got to go stop another one. Oh,
he chooses
gosh.
To do that. It's not actual. He doesn't get paid by the city to do that. He's volunteering. Great, he's a voluntary fireman right now.
He's got great responsibility. Well, yes, though, that's either way. We're both telling you, go play this game. Because it's worth it. It's absolutely worth it. So, well, that's all we've got. If you have any, you know, opinions about Spider-Man or any hype and theories about Spider-Man 2, please let us know what you think in the comments section of all of our social medias.
And until next time, this has been Josh.
And I'm Tom.
And we will see you in the future.
While we boot up the Triflex capacitor, please take some time to subscribe to the show and leave us a review wherever you listen. The show is nothing without you, and any support helps.
If you want to connect with us and discuss the past, present, and future of gaming, please follow us on Twitter and Facebook.
We also have a Twitch channel where we play games for the show and for fun, so come chat with us anytime.
Thanks again for listening,
and we'll see you in the future.